Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, that's Doug, and we are up to episode 7. Talking about the Sharks, we got some hot Sharks news here at the top of the show.
It's hot.
It's smoking. It's the news we've been waiting for, hoping for, but we're also going to be taking lots of emails. Most of the show is going to be about emails. Might even have a trivia quiz for Doug, so we can have an embarrassment of Doug's knowledge about hockey later on in the show. So,
damn it,
stay tuned for that. But first of all, we have to talk about Ryan Clough, who re-signed for a one-year deal only for $1.6 million. That's about the amount we expected. I think we've both used the term Patrick Eves money in the past, either on the show or in the blog, which is sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. So the amount sounds good, but why only a year?
I think this was his call. And David Paula kind of expanded on this a little bit. And in his blog, that's the beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News and the San Jose Sharks, that I think that they agreed on 1.6 and that it was in close hands to decide whether he wanted to be a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year deal. And I think for him, it makes the most sense to go 1 year, don't you, Mike? Because he could have a lights out year if he stays healthy and make a lot of cash next year.
Right. And the other thing that's kind of interesting, actually, it may even work out to the Sharks' benefit. I was just thinking about this the other day. Restricted free agency is a very thorny topic. It's difficult to understand. I was doing some CBA research this week, and actually, I'm going to be hearing that a lot, I can tell, on the show. But actually, Clough, after his contract is up next year, he will still be a restricted free agent. And that's because, and forgive me for saying this, he will not be 27 years of age on September 15th of next year. Actually, he only misses it by about 15 days. But he will not be old enough to be unrestricted, so the Sharks will have retained his rights again, and if he has a good season, the Sharks could then sign him to a long-term deal.
And if he has a bad season, he gets hurt, his knee blows out again, decides to go on an all-night drinking bender with Mark Bell, you know, then the Sharks are not committed to him long-term. So I think this worked out to the advantage of the Sharks, and it worked out to the advantage of Ryan Clough. He's going to be hungry. He's going to be playing hard.
Right.
He's going to be looking for a monster year.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see why he wouldn't be in Doug Wilson's long-term plans. I think he is. And with Blake and a couple other people coming off the books next year, they'll have the money to reward Clough if he gets a contract that justifies it or has a season that justifies it.
Right. And the Sharks will have, obviously, first negotiating rights. They'll have to, you know, they give him a qualifying offer. If someone else wants to swoop in and sign him to an offer sheet, the Sharks will have the option to match. And if Clough signed a two-year deal, he would be unrestricted after that point. And at that time, you know, people could start throwing around crazy, you know, Ryan Malone money, and the Sharks could lose him for nothing. So next year, this is a wait and see type of contract. The great news is that the power is in Ryan Clough's hands. He can have a monster year. A lot of players have monster years and contract years, so I hope the Sharks are going to work that to their advantage.
He could have a great year, and it wouldn't be too shocking if in the second third of the year that they come to a longer term contract extension at that point either, because it's not like Clough's got a ton of options. Mm-hmm. when the contract's up, San Jose has the right of first refusal, like you said. So, you know, they may come to an agreement later in the year if Clough proves to be healthy, if he proves to be effective. Now, I'm not even sure what his role is on the team as far as where you see him playing.
Right. It's too early to say because, again, he's still coming off the injury. He had a great first round of the playoffs, not so great second round.
But in the first round, he was playing with Joe.
He was playing with Joe.
And is he going to play with Joe this year?
Well, there's an email question about that later on in the show, so we'll get to that in a second. The other Sharks news that sort of came out and that somewhat relates to Ryan Clough is that the Sharks are reportedly already negotiating with Marc-Edouard Vlasic. So he's in the last year of his contract, closing the last year of his contract. It's a one-year deal, but Vlasic's was a multi-year deal. CBA says you can start negotiating as soon as that final year of the contract begins, and the Sharks are signing up Vlasic to a long-term deal. Let's speculate. What kind of money, what kind of term are we talking about with Vlasic?
Oh, boy. Looking at the Sharks' salary cap for 2009-2010, they are at $41 million dollars committed salary.
Mm-hmm.
That's with Boucher off the books, Murray off the books, McLaren gone, Blake gone, Gotch, Mitchell, who you would assume would also be back.
Right, Mitchell.
That's no Roenick and no Mike Greer. So they're at $41 million. You assume the cap goes up again to maybe, let's say, $59 million.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
mm-hmm.
So the Sharks have $18 million to play with. I would think Vlasic would get a contract equal to Christian Ehrhoff's.
Yeah, yeah. That's sort of the number I'm thinking in my head, too. Sort of the upper bound I'm thinking is the Scott Hannon deal. The Scott Hannon deal was $4.5 million per year, and that, in retrospect, seems a little pricey. A lot of parallels have been drawn between Vlasic and Hannon. They're both good defensive defensemen. They're both good skaters. They play good position. They're not particularly big. They don't particularly hit, and they don't really contribute on the offensive side of the scoreboard, but they're both great. I think they're both great. I think $3.5 million is sort of the number I'm thinking in my head. We'll see if that turns out. And
now, do you think, let me play Sharks devil's advocate here. Do you mm-hmm. think Doug Wilson's jumping the gun here? We were a little bit down on Vlasic last year. We even made some Josh Georges comparisons.
We did, didn't we?
At some point, he looked overwhelmed without Scott Hannon. Do you think this is maybe too soon to be going after an extension on Vlasic? And is he not big enough size-wise to maybe command a $4 million a year deal?
Well, if the Sharks thought that, they shouldn't have gone after Boyle.
Well, Boyle serves a different role.
True enough. You know, we don't know where the contract negotiations are at this point. It may just be a case of the Sharks want to get in touch with Vlasic's agent and say, what kind of numbers are we talking about here? And if the guy says 5.5, and then Doug Wilson's going to say, you're nuts. You know, so sort of opening the negotiations. Maybe the Sharks are interested in sort of inking him early like they did with Carl. Maybe they might be a little snake bit with Carl and sort of use that as a, you know, to plan next year. All these teams need to do long-term financial planning with the salary cap, and it may just be a move like that. It doesn't bother me that they would sign Vlasic to a long-term deal. If they sign him for $5 million a year, I'd have a problem with it, but I mean,
I think the $3 million range is where we're looking at.
If
here.
They got between $3 and $3.5 million for 3 or 4 years, that sounds like a pretty good deal to me. I mean, he's going to be a plus player his entire career. He's strong defensively. You can put him on the kill. That's market value. Jeff Fingers making 3.5. Obviously, every agent that is certified by the Players Association is going to be using that Jeff Finger contract until the end of time as a comparison. But you know, I think that's real money. That's decent money for Vlasic.
Sure.
Okay. So that kind of wraps up the Sharks news for this week. So let's head on to the emails. First email is from our friend Jeremy, who says, dudes, play NHL Overlord for the next couple of minutes. Expand the league to 32 teams. Where would the new teams be located? Dude?
Dude, I've got a few ideas on this one.
Okay.
The first would be Milpitas, California.
I think excellent choice.
It has the Great Mall. Has a lot of great nightlife.
Right. It's got Ohlone College. Got a good junior
Ohlone college.
Yes.
Absolutely. So Milpitas. The Milpitas.
The pulsing metropolis of Milpitas.
I think it would be the Milpitas Pus Monsters. Would be.
Yes, absolutely.
Or the Throbbing Blisters is another name that I wanted to throw out there. Seriously, some names that I, or some cities that I thought of. Houston's got a pro franchise in every other major sport.
The Arrows. Yeah, they have the AHL Arrows there as well in Houston.
So Houston could possibly be a city that might make sense. Milwaukee has also got a pro sport in basketball. They've got the Brewers and, you know, they've got the Green Bay Packers.
It's a hockey state, too. You know?
So Milwaukee, even
Wisconsin's
though it doesn't
a hockey
sound,
state, they got a good college sort of fan base there in
Milwaukee
in
makes sense. Would the NHL consider going back to some of their older cities that lost teams like Winnipeg and Hartford, Mike?
Yeah, see that was my first thought. Is I think Canada, my first choice would be Canada taking another team. You know, Jim Balsillie was in the news. He was thinking about trying to buy the Predators and move them to Hamilton. Hamilton might be one case. Quebec, I think, would be on my short list. Mm-hmm. I think Quebec is a good city. The Canadian dollar is doing well. I think Canada deserves another team. If they're going to go to 32 teams, and I would not advocate for that, but if they were, you know, Winnipeg, Hamilton, Quebec, they should all be in the conversation. And I don't agree with Gary Bettman's strategy of trying to shoehorn franchises into markets that are, not really hockey markets. I think you want, you know, with as many bankruptcies as we've had in the NHL over the past 10 years, why would you want to go and give, you know, Kansas City had a team way back in the day, right? You know, whatever they were, but
76,
you know, maybe, you know, I would say Seattle, but Vancouver's so close.
Seattle couldn't even keep their basketball team.
That's true.
And you're right. The Canucks are just
right across
the border.
Right across the border. So,
here's a city, Mike, that I know would make us both warm and fuzzy inside.
Mm-hmm.
What about Vegas?
Oh man, I love Vegas. I mean, that would be so.
Now, here is why hockey could work in Vegas. Now, we already did a little research that they have quite a minor league hockey dynasty.
They do actually, yeah. They're in ECHL or the AHL? ECHL.
Right.
Yeah.
The knock on Vegas has always been that it's, you know, could be corruptible. The sport could be corruptible there. Now, no one bets on hockey unless they're truly ill,
like we are,
or us when we're in Vegas.
Exactly.
But we actually feel like we know what we're doing. It doesn't stop the casinos from taking our money. But actually, I'm plus in my lifetime on hockey, I gotta say. But hockey could be, of all the major sports, that could be the one sport that could survive there, based on the fact that it probably wouldn't have a lot of interest from bettors, because if it was there, then you couldn't bet on the Las Vegas team's games at any point. Now, that's how it is with the Sacramento Kings at the Palms.
And you can't bet on UNLV either for basketball. So the local college team. You can't bet on Vegas teams. So not being able to bet on hockey wouldn't be a huge problem, I don't think. Yeah, I think that's actually a pretty interesting idea. But again, that sort of falls into the Kansas City or the you know, whatever other southern city you want to pick, you know, Albuquerque or wherever, or Little Rock. Not a lot of hockey there.
Here's another one. You've got Toronto and Buffalo, very close.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Anaheim, LA.
Right.
What about a team in San Francisco?
Well, the Spiders did so horribly there.
But that's minor league.
Would I love it? I would, of course, love it. But I think you need to show. I mean, if I was the NHL overlord, I would certainly look at cities that could not even hold a minor league hockey club. And unfortunately, San Francisco had a horrible record.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to the flip side. Let's contract the league to 28 teams. Which two teams would you contract?
Toronto
and Montreal, of course. Those are the two. Yes, absolutely. Get out.
I would have to pick Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They're sort of everybody's whipping boy at this point.
Well, they're so...
Keep in mind, they had Kovalchuk, Heatley, and Hossa at one point.
Yeah.
They did. And Kari Lehtinen, who is still in the league, but unfortunately hasn't quite lived up to
his
potential.
They're so terribly mismanaged that I'm looking at their roster right now. It's pretty funny. It's bad. I mean, they're going to be... they're not a very good team. There's not a ton of bright spots to look in the future. You know, when you see Todd White, Jason Williams, and Marty Riesner skating towards your goalie, you're not exactly really afraid.
I might go more on the business side of things and just look at attendance numbers. I think Florida has pretty bad attendance numbers. I would certainly consider Florida.
They deserve to be contracted.
They sort of
the
do.
Way they run that franchise down there too. They're almost begging to be contracted.
A little bit. I mean, unfortunately, I might put Carolina in that case. I think Carolina's had trouble selling tickets. Nashville's had trouble, although they just changed owners. So as a practical matter, that wouldn't really make sense. But, you know, if I'm the overlord, then I can just, you know, issue edicts by decree. I might go Nashville and Florida. I might get two teams out of the South, because If you got an 18,000 seat venue and you can only put and only 13,000 are showing up and you got to give 4,000 seats away, then, you know, it's just a matter of time before you're in trouble. I mean, Toronto's selling tickets for $200 and they're selling out every single night, and you can't sell $50 seats for, you know, for 14,000. I mean, it's nuts. You know, those guys are in so much trouble. How little revenue sharing there is in the NHL. Those markets are just going to be, you know, they're going to be in trouble.
Can't disagree with those two choices.
Okay. So thanks, JT, for the question. I always love playing NHL Overlord. Let's get to the next question from our friend, Ivan Makarov. Ivan thanks us for answering his questions. It's nice to hear his name on the iPod. We are happy to oblige you. And thanks for sending us your questions. So here's a more of a Sharks question. He says, if you're Todd McClellan, would you try and put Marlo Thornton and Chichu back together again? And he says, personally, I think Ron Wilson was way too much ADD when it came to changing line combinations, and I don't think he tried it long enough. If Detroit's two best players in Zetterberg and Datsyuk who can play on the same line, why not Patty and Jumbo? Makes sense, right? Arguably our two best players? Jumbo, yeah. Patty? See him on the top
line? It's hard to do some... We tried to do a little research on this, and it's tough to figure out how long Wilson went with the experiment. From what I can tell, it looks like it only lasted about 6 games last year mm-hmm. when we played Vancouver. It looked like Joe was starting to get assists to Chichu and not to Marlowe.
Right.
So it looks like that's when they made the switch about that time. Although Marlowe wasn't doing jack squat anyways, so he could have still been on that line.
True enough.
And not producing at all. I kind of have mixed feelings about this. You know, I'm looking at that would mean the second line would be Mahalik, Pavelski, and Setoguchi.
Mm-hmm. And three pretty young players.
Three
all together.
Pretty young players. None of which, although you could say Pavelski has proven that he could kind of create things on his own, and maybe this might be the year where he can really take people on his back and be a true second line center. I think Mahalik without Joe is...
Well, we're forgetting about Klo here.
And we're forgetting about Klo. And this goes back to the question of where is he going to play? Is he on the third line here?
If I was the coach, I would start... Well, I mean, it depends on camp. It depends on Klo's knee. My top line would either be Thornton, Chichu, Mahalik or Thornton, Chichu, Klo. And to sort of answer the question specifically... The way I would put lines together is you got to pick guys that play well together, and it's obvious. It's obvious Thornton and Chichu play well together. You got to keep those two guys together. Who the third guy is, I don't know if we can say that Mahalik is definitely that guy. They've had a lot of chance with it. So maybe Klo is the right guy. He can stand in front of the net and, you know, get garbage goals and, you know, create havoc and give Joe that much more space to pass. That may make sense. I don't know. Like you said, I think I've seen a little bit of magic with Little Joe and Patty, so I might want to keep those two together. And then the third guy could be Klo or Mahalik or Seto or whatever. But you got to find those right combinations, keep those two or three guys or whatever those guys are together all the time. And I think we've seen that success, obviously, with Thornton and Chichu. And, you know, I wouldn't rule it out, but as you said, it produces a interesting quandary at the second line in that we got three guys under 23 years old playing on the second line. I mean, you know, not to begrudge those guys, but we're not talking about Crosby and Malkin here. We're talking about, you know, Joe Pavelski and Ryan Klo, you know, a fifth and a sixth round draft pick or whatever those guys were. So it's a good question. I wouldn't say exactly we would try it, but, it's McClellan's call. If he breaks up Thornton and Chichu, I wouldn't be too happy about it.
I don't think that's going to happen. Do you make a super line and put Marlowe up there too? Remember that Marlowe and Joe are going to see time together on the power play.
Exactly.
So it's not like they're never going to play together. Mm-hmm. And that almost makes them even more deadly when you've got, I mean, the power play next year of Chichu, Joe, Marlowe, Blake, and Boyle is pretty damn exciting.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Seeing bombs from the point. Or even, you know, swapping Klo on that line, have him stand in front of the net, and then Blake can just blast away. Klo's going to be a huge body, and, oh, man, that's going to be fun to watch.
I was watching, I think it was Game 7 mm-hmm. on the NHL Network.
Calgary.
Replaying the Calgary Sharks, and there was so much good stuff happening in that game. Seta was awesome in that game. And then Joe Thornton was standing in front of the net on the power play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Go figure.
Can McClellan... That question to be answered in future shows is, and obviously when the season starts, is can McClellan get Joe to go to the net? Because I've heard somebody say that somewhere. I read it somewhere. Can McClellan get Joe to go to the net? And that may change...
And it might not be Joe. Put Klo in front of the net.
Right.
Someone needs to be in front of the net. I think we're going to see the power play just grow by leaps and bounds this year.
I'm looking forward to it. Okay, on to another Sharks question from Scott. Hey, dudes, first of all, you guys are doing a great job with the podcast. Thanks for that, Scott. He's looking forward to the regular season when there's a whole lot to talk about. So do we. Do you plan on keeping this a weekly deal, or will you record more often once the season starts? Well, I think we're going to keep it once a week. As some of you may know, I'm going to be the co-host on the local fan call-in radio show in these parts called... It used to be called the Teal Spiel. I think next year it's going to be called Chomp Talk. So I'm going to be the co-host.
Congratulations,
so,
dude.
Thanks, dude. And so for those of you that want to talk to us in person, we'll be giving out more details about that and times and schedule for that. That's probably going to be a weekly show as well. You know, I only have so many intelligent things to say, you know, which dwindle.
Can barely fill up this 25 minutes.
Right, they dwindle by the week. So if we went one more day or even two more days, I'm sure it would be mind-crushingly boring. So I think we're gonna cut our losses and stick with the week. But thank you for implying that you could handle more dudes on hockey. That was very nice.
Thank you, dude. You're an honorary dude.
You're an honorary dude, Scott. Thank you for that. Okay, so he has an actual real question. Scott says, the Sharks' defense have been suspect the last couple of years as the seasons have opened, usually with us relying or hoping upon younger players to step up and take their games to the next level. Problem is, I still feel like we're going to go into the season with a question mark over our D's head. We replaced half of the starters with new personnel, not to mention the speculation that Big Mac may be on the way out. So Scott's question is, have the Sharks made too much of a defensive overhaul here, and how do we see line combinations shaking out?
I don't think they've made too much of an overhaul. I think an overhaul was desperately needed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, with Campbell being gone, they had to replace Campbell, and they did that with Boyle. And the question really is going to be chemistry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you're bringing
in... Well, we know Blake and Lukowicz have chemistry already, so that's Boyle. Sort of a Boyle. I seem to mistake those two B names. But yeah, Boyle and Lukowicz have chemistry already. They've played together on a line. You know, that I think that alleviates some of those fears. I did some research on this, actually. I looked back at some past teams. I looked at Detroit. Obviously, Detroit won this year. So, you know, that's the comparison that everybody's got to make. Let's look at the first. So, 2008, Lidstrom, Rafalski, Cronwall, Stewart, Lilja, Chelios, Lebda, all sort of at the end. Okay. 2007, they had Lidstrom, Schneider, Danny Markov, Cronwall, and then Chelios and Lilja. So, you could argue that Detroit had two key players out. Markov was playing big minutes. Obviously, Schneider was playing big minutes. They changed two of their top, arguably their top four defensemen, as the Sharks have. I don't know if Blake is going to be in the top six, in the top four. But Detroit obviously had a lot of success with that.
But they upgraded. I think that's the key. Stewart's better than Markov,
mm-hmm.
and Rafalski's better than Schneider.
Right.
So did the Sharks upgrade as far as, is Boyle better than Campbell? And is Blake better than Carl?
Well, short-term, Blake is better than Carl. Let's get that out of
the way. We're just talking about this year.
This year. Short-term, Blake is better than Carl. Sure. Absolutely.
And Boyle and Campbell.
You know, I'm a fanboy for Boyle, so I think he's an upgrade. I think he's shown more offensive prowess. He is not afraid. We've seen fights. He's not afraid to play more physical than Campbell. I like Boyle better. It's close. I've heard people say that Campbell's definitely better. You know, it's close.
So where do you see the combo shaking out here? If we're assuming that Lukowicz is going to be in the top six
with
Boyle,
I would start him with Boyle. I would start him with Boyle. And then I might do Vlasic and Blake together, sort of as a yin and yang. And then
Ehrhoff and Doug Murray.
It's a yin and yang. Maybe, sure.
Well, Murray looked real good next to Brian Campbell in stretches last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he fell off the map during the playoffs. And it just seems like Ron Wilson, either he was hurt or he lost confidence in him. So there's still so much to play out here as far as
right.
If Kyle MacLaren's on the team, you've got to assume that he's, you know, are they really going to scratch him? Or are they just going to have a revolving door here? Where
they might have a swap.
There's between Murray and MacLaren and Lukowicz, you know, they just keep rotating games and see who's playing the best. I mean, that could happen, but they, you know, something's got to give here because we're over the cap.
We're over the cap. So someone's going to leave. So, you know, I think we're going to be in either the next show or the show after. I think we're going to be talking about somebody leaving. We're going to be talking about a change and. We've all said MacLaren so far. I have no reason to think that that's going to change.
You got to think that's who it is.
Thanks for the question, Scott. We got one more question or one more comment, actually, from our pal Ian from Toronto or the Toronto area. He says, you guys talked about Vancouver last show we did, and you mentioned how they have to save face on talk radio of Vancouver. And on talk radio, a Vancouver season ticket holder called in and was complaining that they had hiked the season ticket prices, and the letter informed him that there will be a better team on the ice next year. Even with Sundin, I don't think that team is much better, and I'd be angry as hell if I was a Canuck fan right now. Just thought I'd pass that along.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, we know about season ticket hikes, that's for sure.
I'd be steamed if I was a Canucks season ticket holder and I was looking at the mess that they have going on up there right now.
I mean, I've talked about the business of hockey in past shows. It's a subject matter I'm very interested in. Unfortunately, I think people are deluding themselves if they think hiked season ticket prices automatically translate into better players and a better on-ice product. I think owners raise prices because the market will bear it.
But this year, we were told this. We got the same letter that the Vancouver Canucks season ticket holders got, mm-hmm. telling us that the product was going to be improved on the ice. And I give the San Jose Sharks ownership full credit. They have done that. Mm-hmm. They've never spent this much money. And whether it's just a one-year deal, they've pushed all their chips in. They're all in,
mm-hmm.
fully committed to making this happen.
They are.
And so I think you would agree that we don't mind paying the extra money because they have put the product on the ice.
Right, right. And I mean, that's the linkage that the fans see. I don't think that's the linkage the team sees. But sure, if you're going to say that you want to improve the product and then... Well, they didn't they get Dimitra?
Who cares? He's going to play a combined 60 games over 2 years before his groin, knee, and head hurts. He's not going to be a factor. That's not going to take them back into the playoffs.
I think the Canucks have so many problems right now. I think Luongo is the shining star in that team. And they have so many other problems that, I mean, they would literally, I don't know, they would have to move heaven and earth, and I don't know how they would, in order to make that team good again. You know, it's not going to be this year. It's probably not even going to be next year. I mean, Vancouver has got to sort of circle the wagons at this point and figure out what the heck they're going to do up there.
But they don't seem to be in the rebuilding mindset, which is
kind
of laughable. But the Sedin twins are both unrestricted after next year. Mm-hmm. They haven't, you know, settled that yet. They've got, you know, Luongo coming up for free agency in 2010. And if you're him, are you going to be looking at staying there long term? Hell no.
I mean, we could, you know, everybody talks about Detroit. Ryan Miller signed. Detroit could go after Luongo in 2 years. I don't want to speculate about that. Let's stop speculating about that. I'm sorry. That's my fault. It's my fault.
Jerk.
All right. Thanks for the comments, Ian. Thanks. Keep your emails coming, everybody. It's questions@dudesonhockey.com. And we love answering your questions on the air and hearing what you guys want us to talk about. Because after all, that's why we do the show. We don't get paid, so it's just for fun. So for fun, as our next fun topic, I am going to embarrass Doug. So this is part of the funnest part of the show. I've been looking forward to this. He's giving me the stink eye right now, and I'm loving it. So actually, on HF Boards, which is a hockey board, a guy did a trivia contest, a Sharks trivia contest, or a hockey trivia contest, and I am now going to administer this contest for you, the listeners, and for Doug, and then we can all collectively laugh when Doug gets all the questions wrong. So, but actually, I'm going to throw him a softball, first of all, because we talked about it last week. So if you didn't listen to last week's show, you may not know the answer to this question. I know Doug will know the answer, so I'm going to read this question first. Okay. Which Sharks player scored the first hat trick?
Rob Goudreau.
In Sharks history.
I was there.
Excellent dude. Okay, so we're one for one. There's five questions here in this contest. Second question. Who was the first goalie to win 400 games? The choices are Ken Dryden, Billy Smith, Terry Sawchuk, and Jacques Plante.
God, my other choice, I was going to say Bill Ranford.
Bill Ranford.
Sawchuk.
Excellent, dude. Two for two.
Thank you.
Okay, we're on to question three. Which of these players was not a number one draft pick? A, Guy Lafleur. B, Doug Wickenheiser. C, Mike Modano. D, Jaromir Jagr.
Not a number one pick.
Not, only one of those players was not a number one pick.
Modano.
Eh.
Ah, damn it.
Sorry, dude. Actually, it's Jagr. It's Jagr. Jagr was number five overall. Interesting. I hope that's almost a trick question, fans out there. So, all right. Hey, you're not doing bad. You're two for three. Okay. Question four. Which of the following players is not the career points leader for his franchise? A, Bobby Orr for Boston. B, Gordie Howe for Detroit. C, Marcel Dion for LA. Or D, Daryl Sittler for Toronto.
Damn it, dude. I hate you. I can hear collectively.
Read some history books about hockey.
I can hear collectively people turning off their iPods.
Come on.
Gordie Howe.
Gordie Howe is incorrect, unfortunately. The right answer is Bobby Orr. Actually, Daryl Sittler is no longer correct because Sundin surpassed him this past season. But there's like three players. Raymond Bourque actually leads Boston in points right now.
Really?
Yes.
I never would have guessed that.
And Phil Esposito also leads Bobby Orr. So, and I think there's one other player. Okay.
All right, give me one more. If I get it wrong, then I give up.
Okay, one more.
Give me. Get,
You're
get,
two for four. Okay, number five. Philadelphia famed Legion of Doom line, which is in our lifetime.
Yes, okay.
Originally consisted of Eric Lindros, John LeClair, and
Mikael Renberg.
Nice. You didn't even need the question.
I didn't need it.
You didn't even need it. Nice, right, dude. Yeah. High five. High five. Woo! All right. Okay, I'm just gonna tell you I went 5 for 5, so.
You went 5 for 5?
I went 5 for 5. I knew all of it.
Still better than Christian Ehrhoff shooting.
You are. You are. And there was actually an admitted Sharks fan on the board that got 0 for 5, so. I hope you feel better about yourself. And I hope.
Which one did you miss? Now you were going to fess up to something.
Okay, so there was another quiz on HF boards, and I missed the first question. And is who has scored the most career points as a Sharks defenseman? A. Brad Stewart. B. Marcus Ragnarsson. C. Sandis Oslinch. D. Gary Suter. I got it wrong.
You got it wrong.
I got it wrong.
Well, it's either Stewart or Oslinch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The silence is deafening. I'm going to say Brad Stewart. That's what you said, too.
No, I said Oslinch, and that's wrong, too.
It's not?
It's Marcus Ragnarsson.
Get out of here.
No joke. Remember, we traded Oslinch in like 96. He wasn't with the Sharks long enough.
Ragnarsson?
It's Ragnarsson. No joke. No joke. How crazy is that?
That's crazy.
Okay, you want another? Okay, one more Sharks trivia question, then we got to wrap up the show, I swear. Okay, who holds the Sharks record for points in a season by a rookie? A. Joe Pavelski. B. Milan Mihalik. C. Pat Falloon. D. Jeff Friesen. Oh. I got this one right, though.
You got this right?
I did.
I'm going to say, what was it? Mihalik, Pavelski?
Mihalik, Pavelski, Falloon, and Friesen.
Friesen. Falloon.
It's Falloon. I know, he got like 60 points in his rookie season.
Damn it.
59. Oh, okay. Hope you enjoy the trivia, everybody. It was fun.
I love
embarrassing Doug. Okay, let's go to the shootout. We're running over time, but let's go to the shootout anyway. First of all, Scotty Bowman hired in Chicago. I guess it's better than the Wings, but Chicago now has another good move under the belt.
I guess so. I mean, is this too many cooks in the kitchen? He's not just there to massage Martin Havlat. I guess. I mean, I don't know. If I was Dale Tallon, would you be really excited about this? Bowman in your ear?
He doesn't want to be a GM, though. Bowman doesn't want to be a
GM. Why is he there?
Because he's one of the winningest coaches in NHL history.
How about Bomeister signing a one-year deal with the Panthers, $4.8 million? Should they be contracted?
I hope so. I'm sure he already has his plane tickets for like July 1st of next year going someplace other than Florida.
If you were another team, would you even bother trading for him since he's going to be UFA?
Well, if you... Yeah, I mean, if you thought you had a reasonable chance of signing him, just like we did with Campbell.
I wouldn't give up much.
You wouldn't give up much.
Mm-mm.
All right, third, Antoine Vermette signs a deal, 2 years, 5.25.
Senators still suck.
Oh, man. Get a goalie.
And Matt Sundin still doesn't know what he's doing, Mike.
Yeah. Do we have to talk about this every single
week? Do you believe he's going to the Rangers, yes or no?
No, not enough money.
Do you believe he's going to the Thrashers? Yes or no?
Maybe. I mean, they could give him the freaking keys to the arena.
Now you're high. Ron Hainsey, here I come.
I gotta finish the show. Thanks for listening to Dudes on Hockey. You can read us at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. Look to talking to you again next week, same time, same place. Wednesdays, we're out.
Ershty beady burk burk, Ron Hainsey.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.